Blinking a few times, I stared at her, momentarily dumbstruck. Nothing about this should have surprised me. Of course they were going to play the part of the heartbroken parents. Maybe they didn't know how close they were to having their lives upended. Or maybe they were arrogant enough to think they'd walk away from this.
"Imogen, it's her," my father said.
His voice had considerably less emotion than my mother's.
"She's come back to us."
As a unit, they took slow steps toward me, down off the sidewalk and into the street. Their performance was good, I had to give them that. Bystanders who'd seemed ready to grab them and haul them to the police station or serve up some bootleg justice watched with wide eyes and open mouths. I pushed Gibson's arm off me, disentangling myself from his grasp. I gazed at the two people walking slowly closer, two people who'd done terrible things to me. So terrible I'd left my whole life behind and started a new one with a new identity to protect myself from them. And I realized something. They didn't have power over me anymore.
"My daughter," Imogen said, opening her arms.
I couldn't think of her as my mother anymore. She'd given up that privilege a long time ago.
"The nightmare is finally over."
"No," I said, my voice ringing clear and true. "No. For you, the nightmare is only about to begin." They stopped in their tracks, and a flash of anger crossed Imogen's face. A slight tick in her jaw and a twitch of her eye that would have once had me cowering in fear.
"Not anymore."
I stepped off the sidewalk. "You did unspeakable things to me. You tortured your own child, trying to break my spirit so I wouldn't betray your awful secrets. I'm here to tell you something. You failed. You never broke me." Her dead eyes narrowed and her mouth pinched in a thin line. I turned my gaze to the judge. He wasn't my father any more than she was my mother. "And you. I know what you're going to say when people ask. You'll claim you never touched me. You never laid a finger on your daughter. And it's true. You never get your hands dirty. But your hands and your soul are mired in filth. You let her do it. You stood by while she hurt me and you covered it up, cleaned up her messes. I hope that was horrible for you. I hope it took time from your precious career and you've secretly harbored searing regret for marrying that monster. I hope it cost you a good chunk of your fortune to hide what she's done, not just to me, but to Connie Bodine, too. What did it cost you to cover that up?" For the first time in my life, I saw fear in Judge Kendall's eyes. "You're finished," I said. "You tried to find me because you were afraid I'd come back and cause problems for you. You were right. I'm never going to stop until you get everything you deserve. So drop the act. You don't have to pretend you're happy to see me or shocked that I'm not dead. You tried to ruin my life, and you failed. But I'm sure as hell about to ruin yours." The color drained from the judge's face. I was vaguely aware of applause on the street, my friends and neighbors cheering for me, but it seemed muffled and far away. I was laser-focused on the people in front of me. I watched with a grim sense of satisfaction as the judge's fear turned into something much more permanent. Defeat. He knew he was done. I'd seen that look in someone's eyes once before, the only artist I'd ever worked with who had been too damaged for me to help. The judge's jaw went slack and his shoulders sagged. He was an intelligent man. He knew the kingdom he'd built was already crumbling, and there was nothing he could do to save it.
Imogen, however, continued to stare at me with those cold, dead eyes. No emotion crossed her features, but I didn't think she was capable of feeling anything. Cassidy stepped past me, and the rest of the street came back into focus. Fanny Sue Tomaszek, Deputy Sheriff, and Sheriff Tucker were closing in on the Kendalls, one on either side. Whether to keep the rumbling crowd away from them or to take them into custody, I wasn't sure.
"I'm gonna need y'all to clear out," Sheriff Tucker said.
He approached them warily, one hand twitching like he was ready to pull his sidearm on them if necessary. Cassidy's body language matched her father's.
"Go on home and stay there. Don't think about leaving town. We'll be needing the both of you shortly."
Gibson stepped in between me and the Kendalls.
"Did you say everything you needed to?"
I looked up at his face, at those beautiful blue eyes beneath his furrowed brow, and I smiled. "Yes, I did."
"Good."
He grabbed my arm and hustled me up the street.
"Let's get out of here."
I barely noticed Gibson helping me into his truck, the roar of his engine while he drove us out of town. I was in a daze when he hit the brakes in front of his house and ushered me inside. Cash greeted us, all barks and licks and excited tail wagging. I giggled, crouching down to love on the silly one-eyed dog. And then I grabbed Gibson's hand and dragged him to his bedroom, slid into his bed, and pulled him in with me. He wrapped me in his strong embrace. I felt safe, whole, and loved. So loved, I felt like I could do anything. I'd faced my demons and won. If Gibson asked me to, I was pretty sure I could fly.
Chapter 42, Gibson. The sound of my phone ringing woke me with a start. Callie stirred, making a sweet little sleepy noise when I pulled my arm out from under her. I hadn't meant to fall asleep, but my poor girl had been exhausted, and the feel of her slow breathing while I held her had made me drift right off. I found my phone on the floor and answered, my voice hoarse.
"Yeah? You two all right?"
Bowie asked.
"Fine, yeah. What's going on?" "I have good news and bad news," he said, and didn't wait for me to pick which one I wanted to hear first. "The good news is, FBI rolled into town and took the judge into custody."
"Thank fuck. What's the bad news?"
"Mrs. Kendall is missing."
I sat bolt upright. "What?"
"Sheriff had two people watching their house so they wouldn't leave. FBI showed up and the judge surrendered without a fuss, but his wife wasn't there. Not only that, the judge had a big bruise on his forehead. Looks like she knocked him out and got away, but we don't know how she got past the deputies."
"How long has she been missing?"
"Not sure," he said. "Cass just found out and called to tell me. The sheriff escorted them to their house himself. She went inside with the judge, and that was the last anyone saw her. But that was hours ago."
Callie lifted herself onto her elbow, the sheet pulled up over her chest. She watched me with concern on her face. I glanced at the window. The curtain was closed, but no light peeked in around the edges. It was dark.
"Fuck," I said. "Sheriff's gonna send a deputy out to your place shortly. Just sit tight and maybe stay inside."
"Yeah, no shit."
"Be careful, Gibbs," he said. "I'm serious, man. I don't feel good about this."
"We will.
I'll call you if I hear anything."
I hung up and tossed my phone on the bed.
"Fuck." "What's wrong?"
Callie asked. Cash woke up from his nap at the end of the bed, his ears twitching. The judge was taken in by the FBI, but his wife wasn't there. No one knows where she is. Callie's face went white, and she swallowed hard.
What do we do?
I paused for a second, thinking it through. We could wait here. It was possible Mrs. Kendall had gone somewhere else, skipped town to avoid the authorities. But if she was coming after Callie... Did your parents keep a gun in the house?
Yes, they did. Said it was for home defense. The summer I was 15, Imogen took it out and left it sitting on the dining table for 2 days to scare me.
That did it. We were getting out of here. Bowie said to stay here and wait it out. Sheriff's sending someone, but I don't want to sit around while an insane woman who wants you dead is on the loose. Let's toss some stuff in the truck and get out of town. We'll call my family when we're safe and let them know we'll be back when that psycho is behind bars.
Okay,
she said with a definitive nod. We got up and started packing. Threw some things in a couple of bags for us and for Cash. My mind was busy concocting a plan. Where we'd go, how we'd get out of town without being seen. I wished I had my charger back from the shop. It guzzled gas like a beast, but it was fucking fast and cornered better than my truck. Callie's rental car was an option, although we'd long since returned her motel key from the little place she'd rented it in Hayridge. She'd wanted to keep the car for a while so she had transportation, and she'd insisted the expense wasn't a problem. But I knew my truck like the back of my hand, and I could take it off-road if it came to that. I dropped the bags by the front door. Callie was in the kitchen stuffing a paper grocery bag with dog food and treats. I went to the front window and pushed the curtain over a few inches to peek outside. It was dark, quiet. My truck was parked out front, Callie's rental car next to it. I did a double take. There was another truck out there, parked in front of my workshop. Lights were off, and in the darkness, I couldn't see if anyone was inside. From here, it looked like Rocky Tobias's big pickup. Shit.
What's wrong?
Callie asked.
Do you see something?
Either Rocky Tobias decided to pay us a very unexpected visit, or...
Or she's here,
Callie finished for me. Could have stolen his truck. I let the curtain drop. My eyes went to the scar on Callie's face, at the evidence of the depth of Imogen Kendall's crazy. I'd never seen true evil before today, but when I'd looked at that woman in the street, it had been like staring into the eyes of the devil himself. Damn it all to hell. I'd been sleeping. A truck had pulled up and I hadn't heard it. I had no idea how long she'd been here.
Call the sheriff,
she said.
Didn't Bowie say a deputy is coming? We'll wait inside and they'll find...
A crash of breaking glass filled the air and the front curtains billowed backward. Cash barked and I jumped in front of Callie. Grabbing her, I turned my back on the window, shielding her with my body. Glass tinkled as shards broke free and fell. I glanced over my shoulder, still keeping Callie tucked safely beneath me. The curtains shifted, the breeze coming in through the broken window. I had to act, and I had to act fast. When I say go, we run for the truck. Don't stop, don't look back. Get in and get down on the floor. She nodded against me. Her body was tense, but she wasn't shivering with fear. I could feel her strength, her resolve, her survivor spirit shining through.
Call for Cash to come,
she said. I will. Ready? I loosened my hold on her. Go! I sprang into motion and shouted for Cash to come. Callie was already on her feet. I spun her in front of me and we rushed for the door. She threw the lock and jerked it open. The truck was right there, my keys already in my hands. I just had to get it open and get her inside.
Callie Dawn.
That voice sent a chill down my spine, but I didn't falter. Kept myself between Callie and danger while I slid my key in the lock, my hands steady as anything.
Callie Dawn, you've been a very bad girl.
Imogen said, her voice flat.
You always were. I told you what would happen if I didn't punish you, and now look.
I turned the key and the lock popped up. Cash growled, and I unlatched the door, didn't risk looking back.
You betrayed us. That Bodine woman was going to betray us, too. She thought she was doing me a favor. Isn't that sweet? Bringing the news that you were alive to your poor, sad mother. So she had to die, just like you do now.
I shoved Callie inside, and Cash jumped in after her, slammed the door shut. Get down! With my heart beating so hard I thought it might burst, I ran around to the driver's side. Callie had already unlocked the door. I threw it open, jumped in, shoved the key in the ignition, and started the engine. A shot rang out, and I heard the bullet pierce metal. Callie hunkered down on the floor, covering her head. I hunched as low as I could, threw the truck into first, and hit the gas. God damn, I'd never been shot at before. This was fucked up. The tires skidded through the gravel as I whipped around in a circle. I flinched at another gunshot, glass shattering everywhere. Same fucking window Misty Lynn broke. Damn it, not again. I pressed on the gas and we raced down my half-mile drive toward the road. Headlights flashed behind us. Stay down. I whipped around the turn onto the road and gunned it to go faster. My foot led on the gas pedal. Taking the corners as fast as I dared, I headed down. Up the mountain didn't lead anywhere. We'd wind up stuck on some dead-end dirt road in the middle of nowhere with a fucking psycho killer. Not smart. So I raced toward town, the wind whipping through the cab, but the nutjob behind us matched my speed. She pulled up on a straight stretch, close enough to nudge my bumper. I held the steering wheel in a tight grip, keeping control. My eyes darted between the dark road and my rearview mirror. I couldn't outrun her. My truck was sturdy and reliable, but not fast. Rocky's truck had me on speed, and Imogen drove with the limitless aggression of an evil psychopath. Brace yourself. Cash yipped and Callie held on as best she could. Instead of leading this chase through town, I downshifted and yanked on the steering wheel, whipping us around in an almost U-turn onto the highway. My foot slammed the gas pedal down, the force pushing me back in the seat. For a second, I thought we'd gotten away. She hadn't made the turn. Then headlights appeared in my rear view, closing in on us fast. The road curved and started climbing again. Maybe I could outrun her on the corners, put enough space between us that I could turn off the highway onto a dirt road, get into the trees, hit the lights, and she'd drive right by. My jaw clenched with resolve. I kept my hands tight on the wheel and raced down the highway. Took the first corner so fast that the tires squealed. We gained a little ground on the next turn, but she caught up when the highway straightened. I adjusted my grip on the steering wheel. Another corner was coming up fast. There were two more right after, a series of hairpin turns before the highway sloped down. This was our chance. I just had to keep us on the road. I took the first corner, tires screaming. She matched my speed, her bumper right on mine. Leaning hard, I kept my foot on the gas and flew around the second turn, coming close to the guardrail. Jerking forward, I almost hit my face on the steering wheel. She'd hit us from behind. The tires spun, the truck circling wildly. I fought the force of the impact, wrestling the wheel for control, feeling us spin. If we went over the side, we were dead. Callie was on the floor. She wasn't even buckled in. I strained against the steering wheel, against the force of the truck spinning toward the cliff, gritted my teeth, and held on for dear life, for my life and my girl's. Especially hers. I wasn't going to lose her now. The tires caught traction, and we jerked hard in the other direction. I heard a sickening crunch of metal, and for half a second, I thought we'd hit the guardrail and were about to go over the side. Everything was dark and spinning, headlights flashing across the trees. Finally, we stopped. My heart raced, pumping massive amounts of adrenaline through my veins. We hadn't hit the rail. We were in the middle of the road, facing the way we'd come. Imogen Kendall's stolen truck was nowhere to be seen. The guardrail on the cliff side of the highway was torn open, the metal bent and twisted. Callie looked up at me from her spot on the floor, her eyes big and wide. She had her body wrapped around Cash, her arms out to brace herself against the cab. Everything was eerily silent. I looked around in every direction. No sign of the truck. It was like it had been a ghost or a figment of our imagination, vanishing without a trace. "Are you okay?" I grabbed for Callie, helping her into the seat, touched her face, her arms, looking for damage. "Let me look at you. Are you hurt?"
"I don't think so."
She looked out the windows, shifting in the seat to see out the back.
"Bruises, maybe. Where is she?"
Cash jumped up in the seat and licked her face. She hugged him against her. "I don't know. Stay here." I opened the door, straining to hear anything. An engine, a voice, some sign of where she'd gone. I was pretty sure I knew, but I didn't want to take any chances. Stepping out, I grabbed a flashlight I kept under the seat, turned it on, and swung the beam of light around. The truck was gone. There was a gaping hole in the guardrail on the side of the highway. I'd seen it look like this once before. We weren't far from where my mother had crashed, where Imogen Kendall had driven her off the road. Taking slow steps, my body tense, I approached the guardrail. The land sloped down dramatically, almost a sheer cliff. I swung the narrow beam from my flashlight down. Rocky's truck lay at the bottom, wrapped sideways around a thick tree. The driver's side was completely caved in, the top smashed like it had rolled several times on the way down. There was no way anyone could have survived that crash, but I searched the area anyway. A woman like that could have very well made a deal with the devil. I wasn't taking any chances when it came to Callie. Nothing. No sign that she'd gotten out of the truck. Besides, the cab was crushed. I turned back and shook my head at Callie. She got out and looked around warily.
"Truck went over the side," I said.
"Is she?"
"I can't see much, but I don't think anyone could have survived." Cash jumped out and ran to the edge, barking a few times. Callie joined me on the side of the road and looked down at the wrecked truck. We didn't say anything for a long moment. I slipped her hand in mine, wanting her to know I was here, lending her what strength I could, hoping she knew she didn't have to go through this alone. She never needed to be alone again.
"It's over," she said, her voice almost breathless. Turning, she met my gaze. "Gibbs, it's really over."
I brushed the hair back from her face.
"Yeah, honey, it's over."
Tears broke free from the corners of her eyes. I pulled her against me and held her tight, held her while she cried, while her body shuddered with relief, releasing some of the fear and anxiety she'd held on to for so long.
"Thank you,"
she said into my chest.
"Thank you for saving me."
"Beautiful girl," I kissed her head. "Thank you for coming home. You're the one who saved me." Chapter 43, Gibson. For the last 13 years, Bootleg Springs had been famous for two things: bootlegging and the disappearance of Callie Kendall. To those of us who lived here, it was known for a lot more, for gossip that traveled as quick as the leaves change in the fall, for nosy, meddling neighbors who were always getting in each other's business, for resisting change and not letting go of the past, for people who knew your name and your history, and for people who stood up and showed up for each other.
no matter what. After Judge Kendall's arrest and Imogen Kendall's not-so-tragic end, Bootleg Springs showed up. They gave us a full day, which was more than I'd expected. We'd gone home that night after the authorities had arrived on the scene, checked us for injuries, and taken our statements. Callie was a bit banged up, but for the most part we were fine. All Callie had wanted was to climb back in bed with me and shut out the world. I'd been more than happy to oblige. We'd both needed time to recover, to process what had happened. And the next day had dawned bright and beautiful. Or maybe that had just been my girl smiling at me. Food showed up on our doorstep, but family and friends had left us alone. Mostly. They had assurances that we were fine and seemed to understand that we needed this. Scarlett hadn't been able to help herself. She'd stopped by once, only for a few minutes, saying she just needed to see us for herself. In the peace and quiet of my acres of sweet solitude, now shared by the love of my life and our one-eyed dog, we'd rested. Today, we'd reemerged, and Bootleg was ready. Because what did good West Virginia folk do when one of their own had been through a crisis? They fed them. And in this case, it wasn't just me and Callie who'd been through shit. Granted, we'd probably seen the worst of it, but all us Bodines had been through the ringer this last year or so. The whole town had. So Bootleg Springs showed up. Gin Ricky Park was once again buzzing with people, but this time it looked more like a hoedown or a town-wide picnic. Lines of tables held enough food to feed at least twice the population of Bootleg. Someone had made found posters with Callie's old photo on them, papered them all over the park, along with multicolored balloons. Kids darted around the grown-ups' legs, and a few old-timers engaged in a friendly, if a little wheezy, debate about the best way to trap a possum. Granny Louisa and Estelle had Devlin cornered by the food tables, fussing over him like, well, like grandmas. A group of women, including Leah May and Shelby, clustered together beneath a tree. Callie said they were talking about some new book they'd all been reading. We sat on a red and white checkered blanket my sister had spread out on the grass. Callie and I shared a big plate of baked macaroni and cheese, while Cash sat next to Callie's feet, gnawing on a bone. Sheriff Tucker walked by and tipped his hat to me. I nodded. A good man, the sheriff. He and I had had our run-ins when I was young, but even then, he'd been fair and helped my family out as much as he could. Now, I owed that man a lot. I was glad he was in charge of protecting our town. He'd let Darren the lab tech return to his home in New York. Now that the FBI had taken over, Darren's fate was in their hands. It'd be up to them to determine the price he'd pay for taking that bribe. With the way he'd cooperated, I had a feeling they'd go easy on him. Seemed fair enough to me. The lab he'd worked for had determined the real identity of the remains, a young woman who'd gone missing about 100 miles from where her body was found, a year and a half before Callie. It wasn't the news that her family had been hoping for, but at least they had closure. Scarlett and Cassidy were across from us, picking at the food on their plates, chatting about Scarlett and Devlin's house. Jenny walked by with Jimmy Bob, caught my eye and gave me a warm smile, which I returned. Bowie sat down next to Cassidy, leaning in to give her a kiss on the cheek. She proceeded to grab a brownie off his plate. "Hey," he picked up a second one. "That's why I grabbed two." "Where's Jameson and Jonah?" Scarlett asked. Bowie looked around.
Jonah's over there with his happy hour class members. They're trying to get him to take his shirt off and do push-ups. And Jameson's up there," he pointed.
My brother was lounging on a thick tree branch just above Leah May and Shelby's circle. He has his hat pulled down over his eyes and one leg dangled. My family was all here, and none of us were alone anymore. The Bodines, and the Tucker girls for that matter, were settling down. Who would have thought? Wasn't too long ago, it seemed like none of us knew how.
"This is amazing,"
Callie said, taking a bite of the baked mac and cheese. She shifted her position and groaned a little.
I also need to join one of Jonah's workout classes, or I'm going to gain 1,000,000 pounds. Everything around here involves food.
She's not wrong, George said. He had a plate piled high and a half-eaten piece of cornbread in his hand.
Bowie gave George's stack of food the side eye.
What?
George asked, his mouth full of cornbread.
It's my cheat day.
June looked up from her book.
There is data that suggests temporary increases in caloric intake can be beneficial.
See?
George grinned at June. Thanks, Junebug.
I love fall,
Scarlet said, taking a deep breath.
It always feels like a fresh start. Seems especially appropriate now, doesn't it?
It does, Callie said. The air gets cooler, the leaves change, the world gets ready to go to sleep for a little while. Feels like a time of renewal.
Mom always liked fall, I said. Scarlet smiled at me.
She sure did. What's going on over there?
Callie asked. On the outskirts of the park, Misty Lynn's two bleached-out clones stood next to her car, both sobbing hysterically. Misty Lynn hugged one, then the other, making a dramatic show of wiping the mascara that ran down her cheeks. She'd caked thick makeup over the black and blue bruising Callie had given her. The makeup made it look worse, like she'd contracted a disease that made her skin flake off.
Oh, Misty Lynn's making noise about moving out of Bootleg,
Scarlet said.
Said she's gonna follow her mama and become an actress. Jimmy Bob tried to talk sense into her. Even Jenny had a go. I'm sure you can guess how that went.
Good riddance, I said. This place'll be a hell of a lot nicer without her around.
I couldn't agree with you more, Scarlet said. But I doubt she'll stay gone. She'll realize her mama's a waitress, not an actress, and following that hot mess of a woman ain't gonna get her anywhere.
Cassidy shook her head.
She's just trying to save face after Callie delivered some bootleg justice. Not nearly enough, if you ask me,
Scarlet said. I grunted my agreement.
I don't know.
Callie tilted her head, watching Misty Lynn attempting, and failing since no one was paying much attention to her, to make a scene.
Even if she moves away, she'll be back sometimes to see her dad. I think her having to see Gibson live a happy life with another woman is the best bootleg justice of all.
Scarlet grinned.
Does this mean you're staying?
Slipping my arm around her, I pulled her closer. Damn straight she's staying. She smiled at me, laughing softly.
Of course I'm staying. I'm home.
Scarlet sniffed loudly and suddenly burst into tears. I flinched backward, wincing. What in the hell was she doing?
Oh, Scar, what's wrong?
Cassidy asked.
I'm just so happy for my brother,
she said through her sobs.
For all of us. Look at us, Cass. You're married to Bowie, and Jameson's wedding isn't far off. I still can't marry Devlin till I'm 30, but after that, he best be putting a ring on my finger. And my newest older brother is with an awesome girl, and someday they'll be raising babies right here in Bootleg. Only they won't fight all the time, and Jonah won't be drunk. And now Gibson is with Callie. And I swear to God, Cass, it's just too much.
Cassidy wrapped her arms around Scarlet and patted her back.
There, there, Scarlet Rose.
She glanced at Callie.
Scarlet can hold her liquor like none other, but sometimes her feelings get a bit too big for her little body to contain.
Bowie laughed and stood. I'll go get Devlin in case you need backup. She beamed at him.
Thanks, my sexy husband.
You're quite welcome, my beautiful wife.
Y'all are so cute,
Scarlet wailed. I shook my head at my sister, but I kinda knew how she felt. Cash was tuckered out from half the town playing with him. He scooted over and put his head in Callie's lap. Little guy looked like he was in dog heaven. Not that I blamed him. If my head had been in Callie's lap, with her fingers running through my hair, I'd have looked that happy too. I leaned over and whispered a few kisses across her cheek. Hey, honey. She turned and met my lips with hers.
Hey.
Do you mind waiting here for a bit? There's something I need to go do.
Of course not, but is everything all right?
I kissed her again. Yeah, everything's fine.
Okay,
she said with a smile.
We'll be here waiting for you.
I know you will. The Bootleg Springs Cemetery was on the outskirts of town behind a rickety old fence that had once been white. Generations of bootleg residents had been laid to rest here. Some had grand headstones marking their resting places. Others had simple grave markers made of concrete or stone. I walked up the path that I hadn't set foot on since we'd buried my dad. Before he died, I'd come out here once in a while to lay a flower on my mom's grave. But since Dad's casket had been added to the family plot, I hadn't been back. Today, I didn't have flowers for my mama. I had a more important reason for coming. Shoving my hands in my pockets, I stopped and stared at the names on the grave markers. Jonah Daniel Bodine, Constance Faith Bodine. Small rectangles of concrete in the grass with names and dates. That was it. That was what was left. I know you thought I ruined your life, I said aloud. Having me changed everything for you in ways you never wanted. And I gotta say, taking it out on me, on a kid, was a shitty way to handle it. I didn't ask to be born, and I sure as shit didn't ask for y'all as teenage parents. Taking a deep breath, I paused. I can't stand here and say you did the best you could, because you didn't, but I'm done being angry about it. Maybe Scarlet had it right all this time. Maybe it's better to keep the good stuff in here, I tapped my chest. And let the bad stuff go. I ain't perfect, not by a long stretch, and there's probably a fair bit I don't know about y'all that made you who you are. There's a lot of both of you in me, whether I like it or not. But I'm not going to get anywhere if I stay chained to the past. Y'all let one turning point in your life, having me, halt everything. Full stop. Y'all never got past it. That resentment you carried colored everything you did from there on out. But hell if I haven't been doing the same damn thing. I let the yelling and the fighting and the anger stop me in my tracks. And I've been living there, wallowing in it my whole life. But no more. I ain't standing here fixing to forgive you for you. I'm forgiving you for me. I paused again, rubbing my chin, my chest blooming with emotion. I sniffed it back and cleared my throat. Tucked in there, among all the bullshit you put us through, was some good stuff. I can admit that now. That's what I'm going to take with me. As for the rest, I gotta let it go. Me wishing things had been different for all of us won't change the past. All I can do is make a better life for myself and the people around me, for my family,
I'm my own man, and I get to choose who I am. Dad, thank you for saving Callie that night. Mom, thank you for helping him. Thank you for risking yourselves to protect an innocent girl. I wish it hadn't led to more loss and pain, but I know if you were here now, you'd be proud of her. You were right to hide it from me. I might have done something stupid and gone to prison for it. So, Dad, you did two good things for your son. You protected me from myself, and when you saved Callie, it meant she'd be around to come home and save me. She's the reason I'm standing here, the reason I have it in me to make peace with y'all. Not sure what else I have to say, except, despite yourself, y'all made a bunch of damn good kids. I chuckled, shaking my head. Bowie is a good man, all the way down to his bones. He's the guy I'm going to look to when I wonder about how to be a good husband and father someday. He sets the standard. Jameson's got so much hidden under that quiet demeanor. All that artistic shit ain't just creativity. It's goddamn love, and it's fucking beautiful to see. You never really knew your son, Jonah. He has your name, and I'd like to think he's a bit like the man you could have been had things been different. He cares deep, no matter the circumstances of his birth. I'm glad he's in this world. And your baby girl, Scarlet Rose? Shit, she's a force of nature. But hell if that girl doesn't know how to live. She's a big splash of color and light in our lives, and her loyalty is unshakable. Mama, you'd be so proud of her. Honestly, I think you'd be proud of all of us. And maybe you are, I don't know. I wish you could see what your life together really accomplished. Maybe it wasn't a career in music, traveling the world, but I think it was something a lot bigger and more important than that. You created a family, a dysfunctional, sometimes fucked up family, but a good one anyway, full of the best people I know and a hell of a lot of love. If that's the legacy I get to leave when I'm gone, I'll have had a life worth living. Looking down at the grass, I took another deep breath. I didn't know what I believed about death and the afterlife, so I wasn't sure if me speaking up now made a lick of difference. I doubted they could hear me, but I wasn't really here for them anyway. Satisfied, I left, took my truck back to the park where my girl and my faithful one-eyed dog were waiting for me, kinda like an old country song, only without the sad ending. Maybe I'd just have to write one of my own.
Chapter 44, Callie. The air was getting cooler, but the town-wide party was still going strong. Someone started stringing up lights between the trees. Music played from the big speakers we'd used for my press conference, and an impromptu square dance competition was in full swing. Gibson strolled back across the grass. He was still ruggedly handsome, with those sharp cheekbones, square bearded jaw, and broad shoulders. But there was something different. The nearly perpetual furrow in his brow was smooth, and his icy blue eyes were clear, almost sparkling. Cash woke from his nap, his tail already wagging, and jumped up to greet his daddy.
"Hey, buddy."
He crouched down to rough him up a little. Cash rolled onto his back so Gibson could rub his tummy. "Hey, you," I said, smiling at him.
"Hey, yourself."
He leaned over and kissed me. Cash jumped between us, trying to lick both our mouths at once. Gibson laughed, sputtering.
"Down, boy."
"You look happy," I said. He sat down next to me, and Cash settled in his lap.
"Happiest guy in the world."
I was, too. I'd never, not once in my life, felt so peaceful, so calm and assured. I could be myself, without fear. The people who'd hurt me would never hurt another person again. I'd run away from this very town, seeking freedom, returning here. I'd finally found it. Freedom and so much more. I'd found community and family. These were my people. Every last one of these moonshine drinking, hooting, hollering, gossiping, food delivering people. They'd always included and accepted me. And since I'd come back, they'd taken that to a whole new level. They'd shown me the kind of love you only read about in stories, the ones with nice, happy endings. The kind of love that could overpower even the worst sort of evil. And I'd found Gibson Bodine, a man who'd always had a little piece of my heart, who'd been kind and decent to me, made me feel safe and happy at a time when I'd desperately needed it, who'd loved and protected me, fought for me with everything he had. I wasn't sure if I deserved all that, but I was going to spend the rest of my life loving him, hoping it was enough. An old Volkswagen van pulled up on the street on the edge of the park, where Misty Lynn had been before she'd left. That was odd. It seemed like the whole town was here already, and that looked a lot like... Grabbing Gibson's arm, I gasped, sitting up straight. Oh my God, is that... The door opened and a woman with a crocheted shawl over a long, loose-fitting dress stepped out. Her dark, silver-streaked hair was in a bun and she wore a wide, tie-dyed headband. She had bangles on both wrists and a crystal on a chain around her neck. She looked around with a pleasant, almost dreamy smile. Henna Holly, the woman who'd become my mom. Quincy came around the front of the van, still looking like he'd stepped right out of the 1960s. Long hair, gone gray, with a thin headband around his temples. His shirt had an apple on it and said Pierce Acres. Like Henna, he wore a crystal around his neck, along with wide-legged jeans and a pair of brown Birkenstocks. Oh my God, they're here, I breathed. How? Gibson spoke quietly.
I called them. Hope you don't mind.
No, I said, tears already stinging my eyes. Thank you. Gibson stood and helped me up. I waved to them, and Henna noticed me first. She grabbed Quincy's arm and pointed at me excitedly. I ran toward them, Cash barking at my heels. Henna's open arms caught me.
Sunflower! Oh, my sweet girl!
I hugged her, sniffing with happy tears.
I can't believe you're here.
There's our girl, Quincy said.
Henna let go and I hugged him.
Quincy, you're speaking again. Is your vow of silence over?
He squeezed me tight.
Sure is. Just in time, too.
Gibson stood behind me, one hand in his pocket, the other holding Cash's leash. He watched us with a little smile on his lips.
You must be Gibson, Henna said, her smile wide.
She grabbed his face in both hands and planted a loud, smacking kiss right on his lips. She stepped back and he blinked in surprise.
Aren't you just wonderful? Look at his aura, Quincy, so strong and balanced.
It sure is, my blossom, Quincy said, his eyes crinkling with his smile.
Sir,
Gibson said, holding out a hand toward Quincy. Quincy seemed amused and shook his hand. Gibson turned to Henna, hesitating like he was afraid she might kiss him again.
Ma'am?
No need for all that sir and ma'am stuff, Henna said.
She flicked her hands around like she was getting rid of the bad energy of formal titles.
Henna and Quincy are just fine. What a beautiful town this is.
Quincy parked himself right on the ground and Cash rushed over to lick his face. Gibson called you? I asked. Henna beamed at Gibson.
He sure did. Such a good man. He told us the whole story. Sunflower, I'm still not sure what to think. I'm so happy you're all right. As soon as we heard, we knew we had to come down here after all those terrible events. I thought you could use my help cleansing your energy. But look at you. Your aura's so bright and lively. I've never seen you look so good.
Thanks, I said. I've never felt this good. She looked past me to the still partying bootleggers.
This looks fun.
Yeah, this is... Well, that's pretty much everybody. She clasped her hands at her chest, her wrist bangles dangling.
Oh, good. I can't wait to meet everyone.
Gibson and I took Quincy and Henna into the thick of the party. I introduced them to all the people I knew and loved here, the people from my past and my future. They spread hugs and their own brand of love all around. Henna gave out hugs and kisses like they were candy. She gushed about people's auras and the beautiful divine energy the town emitted into the universe. Quincy zeroed in on the moonshine, happily drinking and playing with Cash while his wife socialized.
So that's them, Gibson said.
He put his arm around my shoulders while we watched Jimmy Bob Prosser trying to teach Henna to square dance. That's them, I said. More lights twinkled as the sun went down. Bootleggers clapped to the lively music, and people still ate and drank, talked and laughed, hugged and had good-natured arguments. I even saw Graham give Mert a big hug over by the impromptu game of horseshoes someone had set up. This day, this place, it all felt like a miracle. It reminded me that good people, truly good people, still existed in this world. In fact, most people were. But in this place, in this funny little town tucked in the mountains of West Virginia, amazing things had happened. The good guys had won. Love had overpowered darkness. And my future stretched bright and beautiful before me. A future with family and friends, with holidays spent around a crowded dinner table, weddings and baby showers and new babies being born, a new generation of little bootleg kids who'd grow up here among these wonderful people, with sunshine summers and snowy winters, with a family that loved them so much they'd never have reason to doubt it. As if he could feel the love trying to burst right out of me, Gibson gathered me in his arms. He took a deep breath, smelling my hair.
I love you, Callie, he said quietly. I'm real glad you're home.
Me too, Gibbs. I'm so glad I get to stay.
The deep roar of an engine rumbled behind us. Gibson looked toward the street and his mouth dropped open.
Holy shit.
A black Charger, 1968 if I wasn't mistaken, pulled up next to the park. Is that your baby? I asked.
Darling, it sure is.
The smile on his face made me giddy. He grabbed my hand and led me toward the car. An older man with a long gray beard stepped out. He had a barrel chest and mechanic's hands, the kind that were perpetually stained with engine oil.
Gibson, he said and stuck his hand out. Otis.
Gibson took his hand and they exchanged a hearty shake.
I didn't know you were bringing her back today. Figured I'd surprise you. How does she look?
I waited on the grass while Gibson inspected his car. He ran his hands along the fenders, checked the doors, the little grin never leaving his face.
She looks perfect. Better than new.
He shook hands with Otis again.
Thanks, man. You need a ride somewhere? No, my wife's a few minutes behind. She'll be along to fetch me. We'll settle up later. I can see you're busy.
He nodded toward the park.
Thanks. Feel free to stay for a drink.
Gibson said. Best moonshine in West Virginia. Otis grinned beneath his long beard and patted his ample belly. I just might do that. I slipped my arms around Gibson's waist and looked up at him. Happy to have your car back?
Yeah, but it's still not as good as having you back. Not even close.
Still, I can't wait to ride in it.
We'll drive it home, he said. Whenever you're ready.
I knew Gibson was anxious to get behind the wheel of his Charger again, so we started the long process of saying our goodbyes. Scarlett had already set up Quincy and Henna with a cabin for the next few days. They were especially excited about the hot springs. I heard Henna say something about skinny dipping. She was firmly of the mind that clothing was always optional, and I made a mental note to let them in on the location of the secret hot springs and the sign-up sheet. It was for everyone's benefit. Once we'd hugged everyone goodnight, we walked back to Gibson's car. Cash wanted to sniff it out first, walking around with his tail wagging, sniffing everything. He peed on the tire, but Gibson just laughed. He let him in first so he could smell the inside. Then he swung open the heavy passenger side door and ushered me in. The smooth leather seat was comfortable and the interior was beautiful. It looked like it had been fully restored. I buckled my seatbelt and Cash sat on the back seat like he already knew that was his spot. Gibson slid in slowly, clearly enjoying himself. He shut the door and ran his hands along the steering wheel.
Damn, it's good to have her back.
With a grin at me, he turned the ignition. The throaty engine roared to life. He closed his eyes for a second, nodding his head.
That's the stuff.
I rolled down the window and rested my arm on the door. Okay, sexy. You want to take your girl home? He smiled again, slow and sexy and heart-melting.
Yeah, honey. Let's go home.
Epilogue. Gibson. The lookout was packed to the gills, everyone rushing in from the snowy, cold night. Winter had its grip on the mountains of West Virginia, puddles collected on the floor from bits of snow falling off people's boots. They hunkered down with whiskey and moonshine, letting the liquor burn off some of the cold. My family was here, and none of them had a single clue about what was going down tonight. They took up tables, a lot of tables these days, laughing and talking together, drinking and eating greasy fries. My brothers, all three of them, happy as could be with the women in their lives. My spitfire of a sister with her man, a good man. Jenny and Jimmy Bob Prosser, who'd tied the knot just a few weeks ago. George and June, who, as far as I was concerned, had beaten out Scarlett and Devlin for unlikeliest couple in town. George and Shelby's parents, who'd settled here in Bootleg. Harlan and Nadine Tucker, enjoying a shared jar of moonshine. I stood by the stage. I'd made us a slightly bigger one a few months ago, and pulled out my guitar. Glanced over at the tables filled with people I cared about. This was going to be a real good time. Scarlett was chatting up Oliver, Callie's boss from Adelon Records. He and his wife, Nat, had come out to Bootleg to visit. Almost gotten themselves stuck on the road up to my place. Californians didn't know how to drive in the snow. We'd set them up with a nice lakefront cabin for their stay, and so far, they seemed to be enjoying themselves. Callie had been glad to see him again. She hadn't been back to L.A. I'd been sitting with her when she'd called Oliver to tell him the full story last fall about who she really was and what had happened to her. She hadn't been sure what the future held for her as far as her career in music, but the answer had come from an unexpected place, that little song journal she carried around. I remembered her writing down song lyrics when we were younger, but when she returned to Bootleg, I hadn't seen her writing.
After the judge had been taken into custody, he was charged with a multitude of crimes that ought to keep him in prison for life, and his psychotic wife had left this world. She'd pulled out a journal one day, and her pen had practically lit the pages on fire. She'd started writing songs, all right. She couldn't seem to stop. And then Adelon Records had started buying the rights to the ones she didn't mind selling. Some were too personal. She saved those for herself, or for the two of us to sing together. But the rest she happily sold to other artists. It allowed her to keep doing what she loved without having to live on the road. Once in a while, a tangled-up musician would call her, begging for help. She'd do that thing she did, talking to them in that sweet, calm voice, getting serious when she had to. She'd remind them they could do it, help them find the strength or calm or creativity they needed. Then she'd bark at them to get the fuck back to work. Sexy as hell, my girl. She delivered a couple of mason jars of moonshine to Quincy and Henna. They stuck out like sore thumbs in our little country bar, with their tie-dyed clothes, beads, and crystals. But they'd become regular visitors to Bootleg, and true to form in this town, Bootleg had folded them right on in. I liked Callie's Blue Moon family. They'd taken care of her when she desperately needed it, helped her heal and grow into the amazing woman she was now. I could have done without Henna's smacking mouth kisses whenever she saw me, but I was getting used to them, and to be fair, she did it to my brothers, too. Callie kissed them both on the cheek and came over to join me by the stage.
"Are we about ready?"
she asked. "All set." Hung and Corbin took their places. I sat on my stool and put my foot up on a rung, settled my guitar in my lap. Callie took the stool next to me and adjusted the microphone in front of her. "Hey, y'all," I said. I didn't usually open with a greeting or an introduction, but I'd invited everyone I knew to be here tonight, so it seemed fitting. "Glad to have everyone in out of the cold. Time to get going with a little music. What do y'all say?" Clapping, whistling, hoots, and hollers. Everyone in the lookout cheered. "All right, then." I glanced at my girl, and she smiled. Her hair was all blonde now, no more funny colors. She dyed it recently, saying she thought it was time for a change. I thought she looked beautiful either way. She nodded that she was ready, and I strummed the first chord. It was a song she'd written. I'd helped her put music to the words. We'd never performed it for an audience before, not unless you counted Cash. He loved it, but we also fed him and gave him peanut butter smeared on dog toys, so he tended to love just about everything we did. She sang the first lines, her sultry voice carrying through the room. The crowd was quiet, gazing at her. My fingers strummed the chords, and I felt the music deep inside. The crowd felt it too, and their energy pinged off me. It was heartfelt and electric, feeding my soul, making me smile. I came in when it was my turn, my deep voice mingling with hers. Our eyes locked as we sang together, a song that told our story. About afternoon spent on the woods, a lonely girl and a bad boy with a guitar. About friends turned lovers, the slow dance of time not enough to keep them apart. And about happy endings and coming home. My heart was full as I strummed the final notes. Callie smiled at me so big and so bright, I thought she just might light up the whole place. Distantly, I was aware of the crowd cheering, more clapping and whistling, hooting and hollering. I waited, a sudden kick of adrenaline running through my veins, smiled at my girl, and tried not to let my nerves get the better of me. The noise finally died down, and I leaned closer to the mic. "Thanks, y'all, and thanks for coming out tonight.
I think most of y'all know, Callie and I were friends back in the day because of a guitar and a song. She wandered over to a log I was sitting on while I strummed my guitar, and she sat herself down like she knew she belonged there. I adjusted the guitar in my lap while the crowd oohed and awed. "And it was a song that brought her back home," I said. "So I thought it fitting that I'd do this here tonight after singing our song." The bar went silent while I stood and lifted the guitar strap from my shoulders. Callie watched me hand my guitar to Hung, her eyes wide and hopeful. My heart beat so hard I was surprised the mic didn't pick up the sound. But I looked into her beautiful eyes, and I knew this was right. I'd known it almost from the moment she'd walked back into my life. "Callie, my mama made me promise I'd never get married except for one reason, only if I was stupid in love." She laughed softly. "I'm happy to say I'm stupid in love with you. And if being stupid in love means I get to spend the rest of my life with you, I reckon it's the smartest thing I'll ever do." I lowered myself to one knee, and she clapped her hands over her mouth. The crowded bar probably reacted, but I wasn't paying attention to them anymore. Just her. Just us. I pulled the ring out of my pocket, a simple solitaire, just like I already knew she wanted. "Callie, will you marry me?"
"Oh, yes,"
she said, her answer muffled by her hand. She nodded, her hair falling into her face, her eyes welled with tears.
"Yes, Gibson."
With the biggest smile of my life, I took her hand and slid my ring on her pretty finger. Standing, I scooped her into my arms and held her tight, rocked back and forth with her while everyone in the lookout, our neighbors, friends, and family all cheered for us. It was funny how life had a way of coming full circle. Callie's disappearance had been like dropping a rock into still water. The ripples had started small, but widened as they went. Her life and her story had touched a lot of people, even changed some lives. Mine was sure one of them. A guitar and a song. That was why we'd become friends, and a guitar and a song had brought her home. Now she was here, in my arms, where she was always going to stay. Here in my hometown, surrounded by our family and friends. It was a fresh start, a new life, one we were going to live together and live good. For us, for all of us, Bootleg Springs was our happily ever after.
A Bodine Christmas, a decade and change later. The SUV's all-wheel drive ate up the snowy lane. Scarlett and Devlin's lake house sprawled out in front of them in festive perfection. It was lit up for Christmas with a wreath and candle in every window, Devlin's classy handiwork. The blinking colored lights plastering every square foot of roofline were clearly Scarlett's. Gibson smirked at the dozen snowmen lining the drive, the work of his twin nieces, carbon copies of his little sister.
God help Devlin survive the teen years.
He peeked in the rearview mirror and felt the familiar warmth bloom in his chest.
God help them all,
he thought fondly. His wife squeezed his hand, and Gibson lifted Callie's knuckles to his lips. They shared the sly smile of parents who'd already given each other their Christmas presents, naked. We're here, Callie sang cheerfully. Who's ready for more Christmas? Me! The chorus rose up from three oldest. Gibson Bodine and Callie Kendall had beat the odds. Not only had they found their strength in each other, They'd started a family together. The family they'd both deserved when they were younger. He cleared his throat to dislodge the bright rush of emotion that seemed hell-bent on choking him. Callie gave his hand a final squeeze and bounced out of the car. His wife. His family. He'd gone from a loner who believed he was no better than the man who made him to a husband, a father, a little league coach. A freaking hugger. Cash, the faithful dog, gray in the face now, shoved his nose between the front seats and gave Gibson a slobbery Christmas kiss. He thumped the dog on the chest.
Thanks, buddy.
Together they climbed out of the car, and the dog immediately snow-plowed his face through the snow on the heels of the kids and their second dog, Potato. That's what parents got when they let their 4-year-old name the dog. The Bodine clan made the mad dash for the front porch, where a menagerie of cousins waited for them in pajamas. Scarlet's rule, Bodine Christmas happened in pajamas. Dogs and Catherine the pig zigzagged through the 8 inches of snow that had fallen, adding a little Bodine chaos to the pristine winter morning. Gibson opened the back door and grinned. Jonah Bodine III,